The Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording.
This session is entitled Avoiding and Recovering from Homeschool Mistakes. I'm Ezra Wayne, and I haven't had a chance to give too much of my background yet. My mother, I think I mentioned, started homeschooling my sister and I in 1978. And then in 1988, she started publishing a national homeschool magazine. And in January of 1993, I became marketing director for that publishing company that published that homeschool magazine. In the next 20 years, I spent working and interfacing with homeschooling publishing companies and working in the Christian and homeschool publishing industry. My first conference that I spoke at was in 1995. My mom was an author and conference speaker in the 1980s and 90s. And so for a long time as a teenager, I was her roadie. I would go out and run the book table and all that. And then when I graduated in 1991 from homeschooling, you know, no one at the homeschool conference had ever met a homeschool graduate before. There weren't any, you know, so they were like, wow, we would love to hear the perspective of someone who was homeschooled and lived to tell about it. And so they started asking me if I would do
workshops, just
workshops, giving my perspective as a homeschooled graduate. So I started doing that in 1995. And then before long, even though I was a teenager when I started, they stopped saying, oh, he's a good teen speaker, and just started saying, he's a good speaker. And so before long, I was on the main stage as a speaker. My first homeschool book came out in 2000, and met my wife in 1999. We were married. We've been married 26 years now. Homeschooled all 11 of our children from birth. My wife was also homeschooled. Her mother was one of the founders of the Arizona State Homeschool Association back in 1983. So we both kind of grew up in the leadership side of homeschooling. So both of us were homeschooled. Our children have all been homeschooled. And for the last 30 years, I've worked professionally in the homeschool publishing industry. So I'm somewhere between like chronically and terminally homeschooled. So it's hard for me not to know a lot about even the publishing side of homeschooling. And I want to get into that a little bit in this presentation. So I'm just sharing that with you to say that I've been probably seen every facet of the homeschool community. In fact, I'm also, there's in Michigan, the state where I live, there is a group that is very similar to what Matches is here in Manitoba. We have a companion kind of group in Michigan that's very identical. We also put on a homeschool conference just like this one. And I'm vice president of that association, have been for the last 11 years. So I'm also involved in, you know, legislative issues. And so I've been involved in pretty much every facet of the homeschool community for the last 40 plus years. So I've seen mistakes that people have made, and have made a few myself, not too many, but I always have this theory that you can learn from mistakes in two ways. You can learn from mistakes by making mistakes, or you can learn from mistakes by observing other people's mistakes and then avoiding them. I prefer the latter. It's just less personally painful for me. So I like to pay attention and try to make a note and say, you know, hey, that's not good. Let's not do that one. And here's one of the things that I think is a pretty big mistake that most homeschoolers make when they first come into homeschooling. They think of homeschooling as having something to do with schooling. And I don't define homeschooling that way at all. It's a bit of a misnomer, honestly. It's kind of regretful in a way that the term fit. I will say that I kind of like the term in one sense because, you know, we started homeschooling in 1978. I graduated in 1991. I mentioned homeschooling became legal the next year in 1992. So the entirety of my homeschooling experience was when it was against the law. And we actually were ratted out a few times by our neighbors and had police show up with truancy officers. And in those days, it was pretty scary because the police officers, you know, show up with guns on their hips, and the prosecution could be that you could be jailed, you could have your children taken away from you, they could be put into foster care, you could have your parental rights terminated, and you'd never see your children again. I mean, that was what was at risk for violating compulsory attendance laws. And so it wasn't something you did lightly. And so a couple of times we got busted, ended up in court. And one time the judge said to my mother, you know, you have two options. You can put your children back in, or we'd never, only my sister had been in a couple of months of public school, but you can put your children into public school, or, you know, we can take your children away and terminate your parental rights and you'll never see your kids again. And oh, by the way, they'll go to public school. So which one would you like? And my mother said, I think I'll choose option B. I'll put them in a private Christian school. So for 2 years, second grade, sixth grade, I was in a private Christian school until the school year ended. And then we moved and my mom started homeschooling us again under the radar. So when we first started, quote unquote, homeschooling, the term homeschooling hadn't even been invented yet. They just called us truant. And so for the longest time, we were just the truants. And then around 1983, someone invented this new kind of friendlier term called homeschooling. And we thought that does have a nicer ring to it somehow than truant. So we started calling ourselves homeschoolers, even though legally we were still truant. And so the thing that, here's how I define homeschooling. I define homeschooling as being 100% synonymous with parenting. I see zero difference between parenting and homeschooling. What do you do in parenting? In parenting, you try to equip your child for life. Am I right about that? Okay. I don't know if you're not awake or you're like, no, that's not what I'm doing. I have no idea what you're thinking, but that's not my aim. Okay. All right. Well, that's what my wife and I are trying to do at the very least. We're trying to equip our children for life. And we use a lot of tools in the parenting toolbox to do that. So we read them books. We have conversations with them. We try to give them service projects. We teach them how to work. We build things with them. We take them to their, you know, grandparents' houses so that they can have other input. We try to go on field trips. We discipline them. We take them to church. We have a lot of things that we do as parents that we are trying to create a culture that prepares them for the life ahead of them. And then one of the tools in the parenting toolbox is academics, because in order for them to be able to be prepared for life, they're going to need to have some academic skills. And going back to what I was talking about last night with our goal, our plumb line, what is our goal? It is to teach our children how to know, love, and serve God, and love and serve other people, right? So in order to effectively love and serve other people, it's very helpful if you have some skills, right? Because, you know, one of the things that God said to Abraham was, he said, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to bless your descendants through you and your descendants. All the nations of the world will be blessed. And then in Galatians, it tells us that if we're in Christ, then we are spiritual descendants of Abraham and heirs to the promise. Well, what does that mean? Like, what do we receive in that inheritance? Well, God has the same plan that he had for Abraham for us, that he wants to bless all the nations of the world through our descendants, through our children. I just saw fear in a couple eyes. You're like, my children aren't even a blessing to the neighbors, like, let alone all the nations of the world. That sounds daunting. But Jesus said it, you know, where he talked about in the Sermon on the Mount, you are the light of the world. You're a city on a hill. You let your light shine before men that they may see your good deeds and glorify our Father in heaven, right? So I mean, this is, I think this is straight Bible, right? So God wants our children to represent him well to the world, and he wants them to be a blessing to other people. He doesn't want them to just live for themselves. He doesn't want them to be self-focused, self-absorbed. The education that we're giving our children is not all about them. It's to equip them and prepare them to bless other people, to glorify God and to bless other people, and to love people and serve them. But they're going to need some skills for that, right? Because, you know, if they become a medical doctor and they didn't think it was important to pay attention during anatomy class, and they like stitch somebody back together and they've got leftover body parts, that's not a blessing to that person when they wake up. I'm like, what is that? And it's like, I don't know. It might be a spleen. I'm not even sure if you need that. Or if they're a airplane pilot, and they didn't think it was important to pay attention in aeronautics or physics classes, and that plane is careening to the ground, you know, falling from 30,000 feet at an insane speed, and people, you know, the 260 people on that plane screaming their lungs out are not blessed at your homeschool kid who didn't think it was, he thought he wouldn't need math, right? And so your children are going to need to have some skills. They're going to need to be prepared. They're going to need to have some tools for life. And so part of what you're going to use as a parent in the parenting process to teach them is academics. So I'm not against academics. In fact, I think that as Christians, we have a priority to excel in what we do. I don't like the idea that sometimes gets promoted in homeschool communities that we should be lazy and we should be negligent just because we can. I think that's a really bad look. We represent the Lord Jesus Christ, so we should do what we do with excellence. We should call our children to excellence. We should call them to do the best that they possibly can. But what is our standard for that? The standard for that should not be the government school experiment. You know, a lot of times people feel like this, especially, do we have any kind of people that are just looking into homeschool or new, like the last 3 years-ish? Yeah, okay, quite a few. You know, a lot of people feel like this is some brave, bold, new thing that's never been done before, and we're charting, you know, boldly going where no man has gone before. That's a really narrow view of history. Did you know that for 6,000 years of human history, almost every parent on the planet homeschooled until approximately 170 years ago when, you know, Karl Marx and some other, you know, communists and Unitarians who hated God decided that they wanted to destroy Christianity and destroy the family. And they're like, we could never do that more effectively than a government school system. So they create this social experiment of government schooling. In the last 70 years on the planet, we've had this new, you know, social engineering experiment. And because all of us grew up in that time period, most people can't imagine anything other than that model because that's all they've heard of and that's all they know. But it's the new kid on the block. It's the radical experimental model. It's not the tried and true time-tested method, which has always worked, which is parents raising and teaching their own children. So homeschooling has been proven for thousands of years. Government schooling, as I said, is a novel new experiment that has been proven to be a disaster, at least for the outcomes that we want. I mean, it's been wildly successful based on the intentions of the founders. So when people say the public schools are broken, well, they're not broken. They're succeeding beyond the wildest expectations of the people who started them for their outcomes. But for the outcomes that we want, it's a disaster. And so what people do who are raised, though, in that system is they try to take that model, which is what they know, and that's what they think about when they think of education, is this factory, assembly line, industrial model of mass reproducing children. Just like you create millions of widgets on a conveyor belt, you create millions of children who all think and believe the same way. We're like, we need to take that and replicate that in the home. So they try to take the school classroom, bring it into the kitchen or the living room, and like, you know, here's the chalkboard, and here's the Canadian flag, and here's the world globe, and we're going to try to do school at home. And it's a disaster. You know, we've had 40 years of doing studies, academic studies, on homeschoolers. And this is not my opinion versus your opinion. This is dozens of academic studies done by PhD researchers, published in peer-reviewed journals, and across the board for 40 years, homeschoolers have excelled on these standardized achievement tests. In fact, most of the time, they're like 15 to 30 percentile higher than public school students. It's not even close. My family was featured in Time magazine in 2001, and one of the arguments that they made, the front cover of the Time magazine said, is homeschooling good for America? And of course, you know Time's answer is going to be, no, it's not. It's terrible, right? But one of the things they said, this is a paraphrase, not exact quote, but it was almost an exact quote, is they said, we would like to say homeschooling is bad for America because homeschool students will not be able to perform at the same academic level as their public school counterparts. However, every research project that's ever been done on this has proven the opposite, that homeschoolers excel academically. So unfortunately, we can't use that argument as much as we'd like to. It's like, well, at least they're being honest. they had to fall back on. But we know homeschooling is going to be bad for people because their kids will end up being social misfits. That's where they went with it, which now we have studies that have debunked that myth as well. And I talk about all this in my book, Answers for Homeschooling. That book is all, you know, based on the facts about homeschooling, not just people's biases and opinions. But what all the studies have shown has been really fascinating over the last 40 years. And it's this, that there is a correlation in public school regarding the academic pedigree of the parent and the academic performance of the student. So, for example, if you have in a government school system, you have a parent who has a high school diploma and then associates, bachelor's, master's, PhD. Do you have those things in Canada? Oh, shoo. Okay. I get over here and it's just the weirdest things. And they're like, no, we don't do that. We just have some other system of credentialing. It's a metric system here, you know? And I'm like, I don't know. Okay, fine. Celsius. I don't care. Anyway, but what you'll find is that there is a stair step within the government school system, and that students whose parents are PhDs are scoring significantly higher on their standardized achievement tests than a parent with a high school diploma, which kind of makes sense, right? That's what we would think intuitively. In homeschooling, it's never been like that. Homeschooling, you have a parent with a high school diploma, a parent with a bachelor's degree, a parent with a PhD. All of their children score about exactly the same. You know, and on average, all higher than the public school average, right? Why is that? Well, it turns out that one of the, and every public school teacher will tell you this. This is not just Israel Wayne, okay? You can go ask any public school teacher anywhere, what makes for success in the classroom? What makes for good academic achievement in the government schools? They will all tell you to a person, one of the most important factors is what? Parental involvement. Right? They all say that. So parents who are involved, it turns out that their children do better academically than parents who are less involved, right? So someone who has put a high premium on their own academic achievement and has obtained a master's degree or a PhD, they're going to make sure that their children also put a high premium on their schooling and that they do their studies. And, you know, maybe they'll even do the homework for the kid. Right, but their children are going to do well. They're going to score high. Whereas a parent with a high school diploma or less, they're going to be like, you know what? I sloughed off and didn't pay attention in school, and I turned out fine. You're good. Go play some video games. Maybe they don't say that, but the point is, they just don't have the same level of commitment to it, and so they're just not as involved. So you see the stair steps within public school. But in homeschooling, it's flat. Why? Because homeschoolers are all equally involved. And it's the parental involvement that equates success. So this last year, Dr. Brian Ray, National Home Education Research Institute, which is the most prestigious and the most trusted source for homeschool research over the past 40 years, produced a new academic study. And they put in some new metrics, and they found something that we've never seen before on a homeschool study that was quite fascinating to me. They found that homeschoolers, regardless of their academic pedigree, are all kind of, the students are all sort of scoring about the same. But there's one group that has dropped substantively lower than everyone else because they finally put metrics in to look for it. This one category of homeschoolers, their children score dramatically less than all the other homeschoolers. Any idea who that demographic group would be? Well, again, homeschool research is completely counterintuitive to the biases that most people have. So it turns out that the one group of homeschooled students who are scoring significantly lower than everybody else's homeschool kids, they're homeschoolers, but they're way lower than everybody else's homeschool kids, are homeschool parents who used to be public school teachers. So being a public school teacher is a detriment to your success as a homeschooler, which is so opposite of everybody's intuitive bias, because a lot of people are like, well, you can homeschool because you're a certified teacher. Well, that's actually going to hurt your chances of success within homeschooling. And I asked Brian, who I've known for a long time, Dr. Ray, I asked him, I said, you know, I think I know the answer to this. I think I know why this is. He said, what's your thesis? I said, it's because they're trying to teach the way they were taught to teach. He said, exactly. Bingo. So it doesn't mean you can't have success if you're a former public school teacher. What it means is you have to deprogram. You have to think differently, because what you're needing to do is to be a parent. And all that stuff you learned in the classroom is going to backfire on you. This is not schooling at home. This is parenting with academics. It's a complete paradigm shift. So when we talk about avoiding homeschool mistakes, this is certainly one of the big ones. Okay, I also want to talk to you about curriculum mistakes a little bit. I had a lady come up to me a little while back at a homeschool conference, and she said, I want your help in helping me to identify a good math curriculum. I said, okay, there's a lot of options out there. Tell me a little bit about your situation. She said, I have an 11-year-old daughter, and we've tried a lot of math curriculum programs, and we just can't seem to find a good one. I said, okay, tell me what you've tried so far. And she said, well, we tried Saxon math. We tried Singapore math. We tried Math UC. We tried Masterbooks. We tried Abeka. We tried Bob Jones. And she listed about 8 others. And she said, but we just haven't found a good math curriculum. I thought, wow, that's impressive. I said, well, let me just throw a curveball at you. What if maybe the problem isn't that all of these math programs are inherently defective and you haven't landed on the magic math curriculum yet? Maybe your daughter just hates math. And maybe it's possible that you can spend another $10,000 searching for that elusive math curriculum that's going to be great and your daughter's going to love. Or maybe you should lower your expectations and just realize, my daughter doesn't actually have to love math. She just has to do it. And yeah, so like I say, I don't get invited back to a lot of places. But I think that we have we've fallen into a ditch a little bit. I don't know how to unpack this entirely. There is a common mantra that gets promoted within the homeschool community that homeschooling should be fun, and that you should always teach something in the most fun way possible. I have mixed feelings about that. There's a part of me that gets that. There's a part of me that resonates with that. And I would say that if you could choose to teach something in a really boring and uninteresting way, or to teach the same material in a way that actually is interesting, that kind of seems like a no-brainer. Like maybe the more interesting way would be good. But at the same point, there are also things in life that we all have to do that we don't like doing that are just part of life. Has anyone here ever had a job? At your job, were there ever things that you had to do that were part of your job that you didn't particularly enjoy? Okay, let me ask this. Have any of you ever been a mother? Okay, now you enjoy mostly being a mother, but were there ever parts of the job that you just didn't enjoy but you had to do, right? Okay, So what are we doing in homeschooling? We're trying to prepare our child for life, right? Well, real life means that there are going to be things that they don't like to do. And every child has subjects that they gravitate toward more and subjects that they don't like. And unfortunately for us, if you have multiple children, they're never going to be the same. You're going to have the artist on one side and the engineer on the other. You're going to have the one who loves music and the one who loves science, right? And they're total polar opposites, and that's just how God created them. Because again, that diversity within the unity, remember we talked about last night, how do we account for that? We account for that in the nature and character of God. In the first cause, God is one, and he is also a Trinity. And so in your family, you have a unity. All of your children are your children. That's unity. But they're all different. That's diversity. And so it reflects the nature and character of God. So there's a good aspect to that. But what I would say with this is two things. Yes, there's a sense in which you can be very creative in homeschooling, and I love that. But at the same time, sometimes you just have to teach your children that they have to muscle through some things that they don't like. For me, it was anything related to language arts because I was dyslexic. Like I said, I didn't read until I was 11. And so anything that had to do with phonics or just words, I absolutely hated it. It just was like fingernails on a chalkboard to me. Now, my sister, I'll talk about this later in the ADD presentation. My sister's the opposite. Like, she's an editor today for the publishing company that publishes my books. So she's still kind of my boss in a way. It's terrible. She's my older sister. So it's like there's always that tyranny that never goes away. We were complete opposites. And it's a hilarious comedy in my mind that I make a living writing books because I was the most reliable. People always come up and say, what's a good writing curriculum? I flunked all of them. I never met a writing curriculum that I liked. I think they're all utterly, equally horrible. But there are things you just have to muscle through, right? I will say this. Let me try to do this quickly. But when I was 9 years old, I'm gonna kind of lean on the fun side for a minute of the flexibility that can be provided in homeschooling. I don't know how this squares up with the Canadian laws. So this is just, you know, I'm probably giving you terrible advice here. Please check with HSLDA, right? Because this is probably not legal here. But we weren't legal, so we didn't care. But I was 9 years old, and I couldn't read, right? So, I mean, it was it's difficult to do school when you can't read. And I was losing my love of learning. And you know, one of the most important things that you have to do as a parent is make sure your child doesn't, you don't kill that innate love of learning. Every child comes into the world wanting to learn, desiring to learn, and then the government schools kill it. And then parents who teach like the government schools kill it. So you have to just be very careful you don't do that. It's more important that your child, okay, this is not HSLDA, this is just Israel Wayne. Views expressed by Israel Wayne are those of no one else. But it's more important that your child maintains a love of learning than that they learn. No, I'm just saying, because if they still have a desire to learn, they'll get it later. But if they shut down and say, I'm stupid, I can't learn, I'm incapable of doing this, you're going to have a really hard time teaching them anything moving forward. So my mom, when I was 9, thought, what is Israel's interest? Well, I didn't have much. I had one, baseball. That was my one interest. So she thought, I'm going to dial in on this. So she wrote a whole year's worth of curriculum herself for me, all surrounding baseball. It was like we did a baseball unit study. So I learned how to do math by looking at baseball cards. I learned averages, ERAs, and on-base percentages and batting averages. I learned how to do, you know, fractions and decimals and all of that from baseball cards, because I had an interest. And then for history, we studied the history of baseball. And we talked about integration and Jackie Robinson. And so we had like all of this cultural history that we put in. And then she actually had me write an essay, which is hard because I wasn't, you know, I couldn't read. So, but I could dictate to her and she'd write it, you know. But I had to write an essay on the physics of a curveball. I'm 9 years old. And then she had me do an economics project where I had to propose a stadium to the city and show them an economic return. So I had to say, okay, we're going to build a stadium. It's going to have 30,000 seats. But then I was like, but mom, they don't charge the same amount of money for the tickets. It varies based on where you sit. She's like, we're going to have to factor all that in. I was like, oh, this is getting big. And so I'm like, well, those mezzanine suites, those cost a fortune. The box seats aren't much, but I was into it, right? And so then I'm like, okay, so if we sell all the tickets and there's 160 games a year, that's going to equate to this amount of revenue. And so if I can get the city to sign off on this, we'll be able to give them a return on investment. They'll pay the whole thing off in X amount of time. And all of a sudden, I was interested in learning again. I went from almost shutting down to loving learning because it was tied into something that I was interested in. So I do see that. I think there's a defense for trying to make something more interesting. And I'm grateful my mom did that because it kind of salvaged my interest in learning at a very important moment. So homeschooling can give you the flexibility to do some things like that if Canadian law allows. But at the same point, there still are going to be things that that your child just has to learn, even though they're not interested. They have to learn some muscle through on those things. So at some point, you'll end up buying a curriculum, and you will find out that all of it or some of it is not working for this particular child, at least. And that's going to result in you having to figure out what to do. And in economics, there's this theory called sunk cost, and it usually relates to like real estate market, where you buy a house, say, at $250,000, and then the market drops and it's $200,000. You've had a net loss on your investment. The question you have to ask yourself in a situation like that is, what's the future for this property? Because if the property value in 2 years from now is going to go back up, if the market's going to recorrect, and in 2 years the value of the house will not be $250,000 but $300,000, you save it, you keep it, and you endure. But if the market is such that in a year from now it's going to be $150,000, you sell it today, and you just have to write off the sunk cost. Keeping it and watching it continue to decline is not a good, wise financial investment on your part. So what you have to do is emotionally separate yourself from the investment that you made and realize this happens to everyone. Everyone who's ever been a homeschooler has done this. You're not alone. You are not intrinsically a bad person because you bought something that didn't end up working. And you have to write off the sunk cost. And then you sell that somehow in a used curriculum sale, and you get 10 cents back on the dollar, and you move on with a new investment that will work better for your family. And the thing I'd like to say for the dads who are here or that maybe are listening to the recording is, please be merciful to your wife in these situations, because she didn't come to my workshop. She hasn't heard this material before. This is just part of the homeschool process. And I know that, you wanted the money to buy a boat or whatever you do here in Canada, new hockey tickets or something. I don't know. New snowmobile. Yeah. I get it. But at the same point, be merciful to your wife and encourage her in these times, and realize that any money, dads, that you put into preparing your children for life, you will never regret doing that. You're never going to miss that money. You will regret the boat. You will. Trust me. Everyone who's ever bought a boat eventually regrets buying the boat. So you will regret the boat. But you will never regret any money that you put into the formation and development of your children. Another thing to consider on the curriculum side is, this is not like an absolutely avoid. It's just something to know. Curriculum that is designed for the classroom is probably going to be less effective for you than curriculum that was designed for homeschoolers. There's a difference. So the government school maps out a day, and they have classes that are scheduled for 45 minutes to an hour. So if you're in math class, you're supposed to be there for 45 minutes or an hour. So how then does the government school teach in order to accommodate the babysitting that is taking place in the incarceration institution? It's not like I have any personal feelings about this at all, but basically what they're saying is, we have to keep these children locked in this room for an hour. So here's what we do. If we're teaching multiplication, we're going to teach you the principles of multiplication and how to do this. And that's going to take us like 10 minutes. And then for the next 35 to 50 minutes, we are going to do drill and kill. We're going to have you practice this concept until your brains fall out and until you absolutely hate this process. And so Christian schools are basically like, what we need to do is, we need to take the government school model and replicate that and then put some Bible verses on the wall and call it a Jesus school. But the model is intrinsically the Marxist Prussian educational assembly line approach, just replicated with some Bible verses. I don't get invited back a lot. So the curriculum that's designed for Christian schools oftentimes has Christian content, but the model is set up for the assembly line, the industrial complex. It's not set up for parents in the home with their children. Does that make sense? So what's going to happen is, in most cases, you're going to spend a lot longer in your school day using a Christian school curriculum because it's designed to keep a kid there for 45 minutes to an hour. You don't need to do that. You can teach the concept of multiplication in 10 minutes. You can review a little bit and you're done in 25, 30 minutes. Move on. So you can, a lot of times, cut your whole school day in half. I would say if you're ever doing more than three and a half, please advise HSLDA. What I'm about to say is the opinion of Israel Wayne that may not comply with the laws in Canada at all. This is my opinion. My opinion is if you're ever doing more than 3.5 hours a day with elementary, you have the wrong curriculum. And if you're ever doing more than 4.5 hours a day with high school, you have the wrong curriculum. So if you use a curriculum designed for homeschoolers, in most cases, it's going to cut a few hours out of your school day, and the children can spend the rest of the day doing life and learning to be prepared for life in other ways besides a textbook. Here's the other thing. The cost of private schools now is exorbitant, and I should have done my homework and looked up what it is here in Canada, but it's out of control. $17,000. Thank you. Okay. So it's $17,000 per year per child in Canada. That's a lot of dough. So the Christian school curriculum programs set their budget based on what they know the private schools can afford to pay. So when the private schools have $17,000 for one student to spend, they can have a pretty hefty price tag on their curriculum and still get paid for that, right? So the difficulty with that is that the price is set for the market of the private schools, not the market of the homeschools, and they can't have a two-tiered price structure. They can't have, here's the price for the curriculum for a private school, and here's the price for a homeschool mom. Because you would have an inordinate amount of homeschool moms calling in wanting to order 150 curriculum sets for their children and have it set to Winnipeg Christian Academy. They can't do that. So anyway, what ends up happening is you pay up. I'll give you an example with U.S. dollars, but it'll give you the same idea. I needed a 10th grade biology curriculum for my daughter. And so I bought one from a Christian school curriculum publisher because it was the best that I could find on the market, strongest biblical worldview. It just was the best thing I could find. And so in U.S. dollars, it was $260, one grade, one subject for biology for my teenage daughter. Well, the next year, out came the same grade biology by a homeschool curriculum publisher, similar worldview, similar content. Instead of four books, which the Christian schools almost always do, they have the textbook, the student workbook, the teacher guide, and the answer key, published as four separate books. They had published it in two. They had the textbook and they combined the other three into one. So printing cost is going to go down because you're only printing two books instead of four. But then also they cut out a lot of the busy work and they just streamlined it. So rather than $260, which I paid the year before, I saw that now they have a homeschool version that is $64. Well, that's pretty substantial price difference between the two, and very, like I say, very comparable worldview. So a common mistake that people make sometimes is assuming that a Christian school curriculum is going to be superior, and oftentimes it's not. I'll also say, you know, I grew up being homeschooled using the Christian school curriculum publishers because that's all that was out at that time, and I got a great quality Christian education from it. So I'm really thankful for them. I'm friends with these people. You know, I'm very grateful for them. They do great work, and I love the people. But I don't use a Christian school curriculum for my children. My wife and I use newer homeschool curriculum because a lot of it is better. It's more updated. It has better illustrations and graphics and higher quality printing. It's much more affordable. So, you know, one thing to consider when you go into the vendor hall is to ask a vendor, was this designed for a Christian school or was it designed specifically for homeschoolers? And I'm not saying, therefore, like, avoid everything that was published by a Christian school publisher, because there's some good stuff out there. But just look for it. You know, be aware of it. Another mistake that people make is not understanding their child's learning styles and not understanding their teaching styles. This is something that I talk about in the Answers for Homeschooling book. I won't go into a lot of depth on it here, but children learn in different ways. Some are visual, some are auditory, some are hands-on or kinesthetic. There's different ways that students learn. There's different ways that parents teach. And then there are different homeschool methods. So there are people who adopt a Charlotte Mason or a classical or an eclectic or a principal approach or all these different little communities within the homeschool, traditional textbook, unit studies, on and on. And so knowing the lay of the land is helpful. And again, in the Answers for Homeschooling book, I go through each one of those and I explain the pros and cons of each, because I think that each one of those models has a strength to it and has some drawbacks to it. And so I kind of give an honest assessment, because I'm not really tethered to any particular ism. So I can kind of equally offend everyone. I'll say this too. Another mistake. Okay, let me think here. Do you have standardized testing requirements here in Manitoba? Oh, phew. Okay, we can talk trash about this as much as we want. Great. So I want to say this. There can be some value to testing if the purpose of the testing is for you as a parent to assess comprehension. Like, I just taught through all this material. I want to know if my child has understood it and if they can communicate it back to me. So there's some value in testing in that sense. What I don't like is this comparison that is inherent within the standardized testing model that basically says all 10-year-olds are supposed to learn the exact same things at the exact same time. And we're going to teach you all the same information in the same way with the same methodology just because we can. Now, as a homeschool student, you know, growing up kind of outside of the matrix, if you will, of the government school model, that never set too well with me. It's like, well, who died and left these people in charge of the standards for all children? Like, who are these people? And like, somebody's like, you know what? This person right here should decide what all the children in Canada learn. They should learn these lessons at this age. I'm like, who are they? And who cares what they think? Like, I'm the parent. I should decide what my children learn when they learn it, right? So the problem that I see with this grade model of testing and standardizing students is I have 11 children, and not one of them is standardized. Standardized tests seek to create standardized students. Well, I don't want my child conforming to some arbitrary government standard. I want them to learn the things that they individually need to learn to prepare them for their individual life. And I see that as being one of the values of homeschooling. So in homeschooling, the concept of grades, you know, like fifth grade, sixth grade, those things are just not very helpful, to be honest. I get in the institutional model of school, it does help provide some structure so that you know that all of the children who are identified with this number have to go into this classroom for incarceration. But in the homeschool setting, it's just less than helpful. So, for example, I had a son who was doing ninth grade math. He was doing seventh grade science. He's doing like fifth grade English, sixth grade history. What grade is he? And what you would say is, well, what age is he? Well, whatever his age is supposed to correspond, but he's probably not doing anything in that grade, right? So in our family, I'll just tell you, none of my children even really know what grade they are. They don't. And I'm proud of that. I'm really happy about that. I feel like I'm doing homeschooling right because my children don't have any idea what grade they are. If my children knew what grade they were, I'd be embarrassed. So it does become relevant twice. There's two conditions where it becomes relevant. And that's when we go to the doctor or the dentist. So on the way there, as I'm driving my children, I have a conversation with them. And I say, okay, we're about to go into the dentist office, and the dentist is going to ask you some questions. Now, they're not asking the questions because they actually care or want to know the answers. They're asking the questions because they are adults, and adults don't know how to make small talk with children. So the first question that they're going to ask you is, what school do you go to? And the answer to that question is, you homeschool. The second question they are going to ask you is, do you like it? The answer to that question is yes. And they're like, but, and I'm like, today the answer is yes. And then they're going to ask you what grade you are. How old are you? They're like, I'm 10. I'm 10. So I was homeschooled, so like I have the same malady. I'm like, ninth. You know, and so then we rehearse. Okay, what school do you go to? I go, homeschooled. Do you like it? Yes. What grade are you? Ninth. Okay. And by that time, they will have stuck something in your mouth and, you know, they've moved on. So that's about the only time that it really becomes relevant in my family. But the thing is, the Apostle Paul tells us in the scripture that comparing ourselves among ourselves, we are very unwise. And that's exactly what standardized testing does. It's to tell you how your child compares to all the other 10-year-olds out there. Well, some other 10-year-old child is never the standard for my 10-year-old child. The standard for my 10-year-old child is my 10-year-old child doing the absolute best that she can with the capacity that she has at this point? If she is, I'm good with that. If she's not, I'm not good with that. That's the standard. So what some other child knows or can do academically is 100% irrelevant to my child. And yet the system, the government school system, has created a model where your child's entire self-worth is predicated on her being able to know the exact facts at the exact same time as some other child that age. Here's what I believe standardized testing is really useful for. It is useful as a social experiment to help us to identify people in society who are good at taking tests. And that's all. Because there are some people who are just innately good test takers, and standardized tests identify those people. Other than that, I don't think it has any value. It certainly doesn't tell you anything about intelligence. I'll tell you partly how I know this, because when I was growing up, I had this friend. And when you're children, you have friends, and then you grow up and you think about your childhood friends and you think, why were we friends? And every once in a while, just out of nostalgia, you'll hunt them down on social media and you'll connect with them. And within just a few weeks, you remember why you lost touch in the first place. Well, I had this friend that I spent a lot of time with as a youth, and he was supposedly intelligent. In fact, he was an honor roll student. His parents drove around with a bumper sticker that said, my child is on the honor roll at Jefferson Elementary School, and he got top grades in his class. And that always baffled me because he was my friend, and I knew him. And I knew he was as dumb as a bag of rocks. I mean, this kid, one time in the middle of winter, went out and stuck his tongue to a metal flagpole just to see what would happen. Another time, he decided to urinate on an electric fence to find out what would happen. I remember one time we were out riding bicycles, and we were supposed to be home before dark, and we'd gone out too far, and we couldn't get back in time. And so I'd lost my way. I didn't know how to get back to his house. And so we were riding. We came to a four-way stop. And I think four-way stops work the same way in Canada that they do in the U.S., I'm pretty sure. And a four-way stop. And I said, which way do we go to get to your house? And he said, anyway. I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't think that works. He's like, yeah, just pick one. I said, pick one? He's like, yeah. He goes, they'll all get us there. And so I just start driving straight. I start riding straight. We go like a mile down the road. We're huffing and puffing on the bicycles. We're kind of tired. And he goes, it's a good thing you didn't go right or left back there. I said, really? Why? He goes, I said, you said all of them would get us home. Well, they will, but it would have taken a lot longer. Anyway, my point is, he was good at taking tests. Not very intelligent. Socialization myth, I'm kind of running out of time on this, but I guess I'll say this, because I have about 42 different answers that I give to people when they ask, what about socialization? And it completely just depends on what mood I'm in. The one I'll share with you quickly is National Home Education Research Institute did a study called Homeschooling Grows Up. And it was a study of 8,000 students who had been homeschooled 7 years or more. So the predominance of their educational experience was at home. And they tracked them from childhood to adulthood. And they found out that as adults, they were more positively socially engaged in their communities than public schoolers and private schoolers. So the socialization question is tied to another question, which is the good citizen question, right? They're going to be social misfits. They're not going to know how to communicate. They're not going to know how to talk to others or work with others. And so the therefore is they won't be good, positive, contributing citizens. And this was, again, back to Time Magazine, this was their argument. And so what was hilarious was they said they wanted to discredit homeschooling for academic reasons, but they knew they could do so on the socialization issue because it would not create students who were positively engaged in their communities. Well, this study came out 7 years after the Time Magazine issue, and what it demonstrated was you have to first define good citizen. What's a good citizen? So it turned out that good citizens are people who work jobs, don't get arrested, don't do drugs, you know, don't, that they raise families, they give back to their communities through community service, through giving donations to charitable causes, all of these things. But it turns out that homeschoolers were the most positively engaged in all those things in religious communities and, you know, giving back to their community. The least positively socially engaged were public schoolers, right? So again, the research just debunks all the myths about homeschooling. But the funny thing was, it also turns out that homeschoolers lean very far to the right politically. So when that came out, the liberal media lost their minds and they shifted the narrative. So the narrative previously had been homeschoolers will be social recluses. They won't be involved in their communities. They won't be engaged in the life of the community. And then after the study came out, their answer was, oh, snap, homeschoolers are getting engaged in their communities. This needs to be stopped. We need to outlaw homeschooling. And so you can't win with those guys, right? Homeschooling is always going to be bad from their perspective. But that myth that socialization will produce students who don't know how to compete in the real world has been disproven by, again, academic peer-reviewed studies. 2 Peter 1:5, Peter says, for this very reason, make every effort to supplement your faith with virtue and virtue with knowledge. He says the foundation for the educational model needs to be faith. Why? Because Hebrews 11:6 says, without faith, it's impossible to please God. Not difficult, not kind of hard, impossible to please God. If your child's school does not begin with faith in God, it's impossible for that school to please God. Why? Because, and it goes on to say in Hebrews 11:6, because whoever comes to God has to acknowledge that he is and that he rewards those who diligently seek him. You have to acknowledge God and you have to say that that you will be rewarded with the knowledge of God when you diligently seek him. And that's what we're doing in our educational model. Government schooling does not do that. It doesn't start with faith. What does it start with? It starts with knowledge. Peter says you don't start with knowledge. You start with faith. The next layer you add is not knowledge. It's virtue. What is virtue? Virtue is moral character. And why is that important? It's important because if you just give someone information and they don't have the ethics to know what to do with the information, then you create an intelligent criminal. So you start with faith and then virtue and then knowledge. And then doing too much. You know, sometimes people say, well, homeschoolers are going to be isolated. I don't meet homeschoolers that are isolated. Back when I started homeschooling, there were a few. I'll just admit it. There were a few that were too socially isolated. But today, I think the tendency is that homeschoolers are just doing too much because they have this fear that their child's going to miss out on something. So they have them involved in all these co-op classes and all these field trips and all these enrichment programs. And it's about being a family. It's about having a relationship. And then finally, I know it's tempting to want to homeschool your children with other people's money because it's always more fun to spend other people's money. And in Alberta, they actually do this. Yeah, I haven't been invited back to Alberta for some reason. but But whatever the government pays for, it controls. And if you want to have autonomy in choosing the curriculum for your children and making the decisions that are right for your individualized child, you need to pay for it. And yeah, it's a bummer that you pay for everybody else's children to be, you know, incarcerated, and you have to pay for your children to be educated. But it's unfortunate. I get that. But that's the reality of it. And so so I would encourage you to avoid the bait, because there's a hook. There's a hook in the bait. There will always be regulations and controls on what the government spends. We already saw it in Alberta. I don't know if you followed it there, but a couple of years ago, the government decided anybody who's using a government-funded educational program has to teach an LGBTQ-affirming curriculum. And they had to go to court, you know, over that issue. So if they pay for it, they get to call the shots. So all these things and more are in my book, Answers for Homeschooling, Top 25 Questions Critics Ask. This book is a book of apologetics to defend the decision to homeschool. This is a great book to give to people who are on the fence about homeschooling. This book is probably the best book to give to your husband if he's not supportive. You know, I actually had a friend of mine in Michigan who had homeschooled for 20 years, and she said for 20 years her dad was not supportive and just had snide remarks for 20 years about her homeschool. She said, I bought your book, Answers for Homeschooling. I gave it to my dad, and I said, Dad, would you please read this over the weekend and just, you know, I think it'll help you understand where I'm coming from. He was like, eh, well, I'll look at it. Came back on Monday, and he said, you know what? I read that book, and he said, I have to admit, for 20 years, I've never understood why you do this. And he said, for the first time ever, I get it. He said, I just want you to know I'm 100% behind you. She said, that was the best, like, $12 I ever spent in my life. She's like, had I only known, I could have done it sooner. It would have just changed our dynamic. So this is, again, fact-based, research-based. So I think we still have some print copies of this. My booth is out at booth number 52. We're sold out of several of these. This book is sold out. Raising Them Up is sold out. I think we just have a few copies left of my Bible studies. But the Learning House is taking orders, and they will ship any of my books to you for free. So you go to their cash register at the Learning House, you tell them what you want to order, and they will ship the books that we don't have on the table to you for free. So that's how that's going to work today. Again, my booth is 52, and they are just across the booth from me. Go to the Learning House, check out, and tell them you which books you want to order, and they will have you fill out a form, and they'll ship it to your house for free. This is my website and my email list. I'd love to have you sign up for that, and I will see you back. I'm doing a session on ADD and ADHD, and then I'm doing another keynote tonight on education versus schooling. They are not the same, and I want to explain how schooling is one of the greatest hindrances to actual education. So I will see you at my later sessions. Thank you.
Once again, the Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording. Please visit them at learninghouse.ca.